The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Time now for the second hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And of course, if we're going to talk a little bit about crime, it's a great excuse to use an awesome Stevie Ray Vaughan live tune. He's doing a song that was originally recorded by the great late Howlin' Wolf. I'm Leaving You, Commit a Crime. This is from his Live Alive album. I think it was released posthumously and was the first album I ever got going half and half with my dad when I was, I think, 4 years old. Because I already was a big Stevie Ray Vaughan fan. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. So great to be with you once again this evening. I have a column out in the Denver Gazette yesterday, Friday. Will the General Assembly protect criminals? It talks about a bill proposed in the legislature, SB 21-062, so SB 62, and it is a monstrosity, very concerning if it passes. And folks, unfortunately, I think there's a high likelihood that it will pass. This comes amidst a crime wave that has just been rising with the pandemic and what we saw last summer in terms of civil unrest and more. To talk about this, I'm very pleased to be joined by none other than the mayor of Aurora, Mike Kaufman. Sir, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks for having me.
So before we get into it with this snowstorm going on, I just want to ask you sort of what your thoughts are amidst the environment, the accumulation, and what folks should be keeping in mind in terms of their own safety and decisions.
Oh, I just really appreciate it. I think that what we're, you know, they could be wrong. I think that probably being this close to the storm, I think they're probably right. But I think when you get into Saturday afternoon, Sunday, and potentially into Monday, it's just better to stay home. Be on the safe side. Stay home. Don't get stuck out there. If you absolutely have to hit the road, make sure you have things like blankets and water and maybe some food with you, just in case you get stuck and it's going to take a while for anybody to pull you out.
You spent some time with the homeless, and I'm curious your thoughts on what the homeless might endure in this storm.
Yeah, normally in cold weather, they actually do fine. I think that what they do is they tend to hibernate. And though certainly in Denver, where I experienced homeless for a week intentionally, people bring food out to them. Probably in the suburban areas is going to be tougher on them because they're more dispersed and people are less supportive around them. But boy, what will make a difference is if you have a lot of snow where people can't get out to them, that's a different issue. And those in the suburbs are more likely to panhandle. Those in the Denver, downtown area are more likely to just have support from the local communities. But it's going to be difficult, I think, all the way around.
Is there anything that the city is doing to help those in need at this point?
Well, we normally have outreach efforts to reach out to them, and those outreach efforts can bring food out to them as well. So we normally, on a weekly basis, we have an outreach effort to check and see how they're doing.
Mayor Mike Kaufman of Aurora joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We're recording this conversation on Friday. Mr. Mayor, let's talk about crime and what's been going on here. I mean, this week we had quite a night. Which night was that when we had the street racing that went on I-225? And gosh, when you see that happening and then you couple it with the rise in violent crime, the rise in property crime, especially auto thefts, as you know, I am part of that 70.6% increase in motor vehicle thefts in Aurora last year. What do you make of the crime that's going on in the city of Aurora and the Denver metro area at large?
I'd probably separate the street racing, although it's very dangerous.
I agree.
It certainly hurts our ability to first of all, I mean, they blocked I-225 southbound where, you know, emergency vehicles couldn't get through, normal traffic couldn't get through. That's a problem. We have to figure out how to deal with it. Probably paying more attention to their social media. They keep changing. It keeps evolving to where I think when the police feel like they've got a handle on it, then all of a sudden they change in the way that they communicate to each other. But we've got to, and the penalties need to be tough. On this, I think somebody ought to definitely lose their license. I don't care first time around, that'll lose their license. And obviously, these people, you know, they're passionate about driving, and so hopefully, maybe that would be a deterrent. But I don't know. But it's dangerous and it's increasing. But I pulled that separate than the violent crime, particularly the rise in violent crime and property crime too. Because a lot of times property, you can't dismiss the fact that a lot of property crimes turn violent. And so what bothers me about, I think you mentioned earlier, we were talking about Senate Bill 62, this ACLU-led effort in the Colorado General Assembly to essentially take what I didn't like it, but I understood it during the pandemic, where jails were saying, look, we can't take, we just can't take prisoners to our capacity because of the social distancing requirements under the pandemic. So we temporarily are not going to take a whole list of offenses. And one of them that's a great example, I think, is auto theft, vehicle auto theft. So we're not going to take those. And so for the city of Aurora, we're dependent on the counties to incarcerate people that we arrest to imprison them pretrial. And so they wouldn't take them. And so essentially, it's like a traffic ticket. They're saying, okay, we can't arrest you. Here's basically a court date to show up in court. I mean, and what that has done is it really has sent a green light to the people that these habitual, auto theft criminals to go for it. And boy, they have. If you take 2020 is a good year because we were in the pandemic through most of 20. If you compare that to 2019, in the city of Aurora, we had a 70.6% increase in auto theft. If you look metro-wide, there's been a 55% increase in auto theft. And so, and what they want to do is take things like auto theft and say, well, we really didn't have a problem during the pandemic. Let's go ahead and continue this policy going forward. And let's put it in state statute. And I think that's just the most ridiculous thing. And unfortunately, Aurora is in three counties. It's in Douglas, Arapahoe, Adams County. The Arapahoe County Sheriff was Sheriff Brown was is a member of the legislative committee for the State Association of County Sheriffs, and he voted to take a neutral position on this bill. And I think that was just a horrible mistake. And then he kind of I got on a conference call with him, with this Arapahoe County Justice Coordinating Committee. Mm-hmm. So I got on it because I was so concerned about him in my prior discussions with him and his attitude towards law enforcement. I think he's just so soft on crime. And so he defended his position even after I testified before the state legislature, before the state Senate against the bill, saying, recorded, because it was during the meeting, and he goes, well, you know, there's been a gradual increase of, you know, auto thefts, you know, prior to pandemic, making it sound like, you know, there's no big deal. Big deal? 70.6%? He doesn't get that? that's a big deal?
Well, Mayor Kaufman.
I just want to jump in, and because you said that point from Sheriff Rent-A-Cop Tyler Brown, who has no, like, you look at his background prior to managing to somehow squeak his way into becoming sheriff, he has no real background in this law enforcement space of value, in my opinion. And I just, it is stunning to hear him shrug off the kind of theft, vehicle theft. I mean, as a two-time victim last year among this rise, and then to know how difficult it is for so many people, for example, who may not work out financially for them from their insurance company, for example. And of course, you've got all the hassle and the pain and I mean, it was a 10-week ordeal for me before I finally had it resolved, for example.
It is stunning. Somebody who, and he has never expressed to me, in my conversations with him, and I've been pretty critical with him, that a concern about the residents who are the victims of crime. And that, isn't that his job? I mean, it isn't that his job is to protect the public. I don't think he gets it. I think he's more concerned with the rights of criminals, the rights of the honest people in the city of Aurora who get up every morning and go to work. That is not his passion.
We're talking with Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman. And Mayor Kaufman, in your testimony to the state legislature last week, you cited Commander Mike Greenwald, overseer of the Metropolitan Auto Theft Task Force. And I want to quote what you quoted him as saying. Our thieves quickly learned they were not going to jail. That's the biggest factor. We'd have them sitting on the side of the road in handcuffs, and they'd tell us, take the cuffs off because you know I'm not going to jail. And, you know, this is something that was echoed by law enforcement officers I talked to during my own ordeals last year, for example. So I know this is real, Mayor Kaufman.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, it's just a property crime. I mean, these things easily turn violent. There was a case we had in the city of Aurora where on Colfax, one of the small motels, somebody staying in the motel, they got a truck parked out in front of their room, and they noticed somebody messing with their truck, you know, and it's early in the morning, and somehow they wake up and they go out to see what's going on, and then the guy shoots them. He shoots them, and unfortunately, the victim bled to death before emergency personnel got to him. And so this may not be an issue for Sheriff Brown, but let me tell you, it's an issue for me.
Well, and as it should be. I mean, you're talking with people in this city of Aurora who have fallen prey to these crimes all too often. And let's be clear, too, that auto crimes, and mine was an example of it. My two-time auto theft, second one was at an auto body shop further north in Commerce City. Let's be very clear that so many of these are drug related, that there was meth. Oh, yeah. This was a meth related crime. And that fits in with the rise in drug crimes, which also would be less likely to see somebody arrested related to drug related crime under this bill of SB 62.
And a lot of the vehicle auto theft, what we know is that what they'll do is they'll steal the car, use the car for other crimes, and then eventually ditch the car. And of course, in the shape,
yes,
it's in by the time they ditch it, and they've broken into the car and they, you know, hotwired the car or whatever they technically do, you know, and this is just occurring everywhere. I got a call in, even South Aurora, where, somebody had a truck, parked in, on their driveway, and, you know, they, you know, somebody drove up in the middle of the night, two people get out of the car, and, you know, then they're, you know, messing with the, you know, the locks and everything to get into it. You know, the people are fortunately awoken, and so they scamper off, but unfortunately they didn't, there wasn't a confrontation. But plus you have to remember that cops don't, won't chase, you know, stolen vehicle, even though if they know it's a stolen vehicle, they won't chase it. Because they only if the, so I was in a, the vehicle chase that I was in, once when I was up in District 1 and went out, and we actually was involved in a high speed chase. Actually, it was the person that killed, the story that I gave about the guy getting killed,
mm-hmm,
by the car thief. He was an habitual car thief. Well, so we ran it. We knew the vehicle that he had, was driving at the time, and the area that he was in. And so I just happened to be out on with District 1 commander, and we came up behind him. And I think, what's the probability of this? And he turns the siren on, and the guy bolts. And so we were in a high-speed chase on that one. But it was only because he was a murder suspect.
Mm.
It wasn't because he had a stolen vehicle.
There's a couple of points that I think will really underscore why this Senate Bill 62 is so bad. And to be clear on what it would do, the bill prohibits a peace officer, I'm reading from it, from arresting a person based solely on the alleged commission of a traffic offense, petty offense, municipal offense, misdemeanor offense, class 4, 5, or 6 felony, or a level 3 or 4 drug felony, unless, and then it provides some limited exceptions. Otherwise, as you mentioned before, Mayor Kaufman, officers may only issue a summons and complaint, aka a ticket. That's a heck of a lot of crimes. And if criminals don't fear the possibility of arrest, Mr. Mayor, especially amidst a serious court system backlog we already have, logically they're going to keep committing crimes.
And God bless the Chiefs of Police Association for the state of Colorado, because they stood for the people, and they stood against this bill. And and when I was first to testify, thank God, you know, for, you know, State Senator Rhonda Fields, who informed me she was going to oppose the bill, and went to the staff and put me number one in terms of testifying. So I testified first as a courtesy, I guess, for my long elected service. But the chiefs of police testified after me, and they testified in pure opposition to the bill, unlike the county sheriffs, who were neutral on the bill, and which was a gutless position. So I just really want to commend the county sheriffs. I did talk to the governor about the bill and, you know, just urge him to veto it. But I said, if you're going to negotiate the bill, maybe there are some aspects of it that are okay. But negotiate it with the chiefs of police. Don't negotiate it with the county sheriffs.
In my column for the Denver Gazette, just a few minutes left with our guest, Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman, entitled "Will the General Assembly Protect Criminals on Friday?" I cite a research paper in the journal Policing, an international journal from 2018, regarding the consequences of restricting police arrest authority. And in this journal article, they find from empirical study that such policies as this result in, quote, less deterrence and more crime. The abstract summarizes it by saying the restrictions on police arrests significantly increased the crime rate. In sum, the present study provides empirical support for the hypothesis that restrictions on police arrest authority decrease deterrence and increase the crime rate. And even more, Mayor Kaufman, researchers found further that, quote, the crime rate increased the longer the restrictions on police arrest authority were in effect. And I point out in my column that this is a critical point, because since we've already had basically a year-long limitation on jail populations put in place, and we've seen the rise in crime, we already can see that this will pan out over time.
You know, the interesting thing is when career criminals are not in the street, they're incarcerated, they're not committing crimes. Isn't that interesting? I think that's kind of a basic observation standpoint.
It does seem like common sense, doesn't it? And here's an empirical study that demonstrates that point. So let's put a pin on this, Mayor Kaufman. What are the stakes here with this Senate Bill 62 in your assessment?
Well, stakes are big. Stakes are big. I mean, I hope at least it could be amended, you know, just amended down. And again, what I hope that the legislators would do is if you're going to vote for the bill, don't do it and tell the chiefs of police, sign off on the amendments that take things like vehicle auto theft and other things and these felenies out of this. That maybe there are a few, minor offenses that's okay. But look to the chiefs of police in terms of their leadership. Don't look to the county sheriff.
And let's be clear that SB 62 really will neuter police officers' ability to protect communities amidst this rising crime spree. And it builds upon Senate Bill 217, already passed last year by the General Assembly, and their poorly crafted elimination of qualified immunity. So, Mayor Kaufman, I so appreciate you taking the time and speaking out about this on this program and, of course, in the legislature and elsewhere, and definitely letting folks know. I found out about this bill because of your Facebook post. So I appreciate you keeping the community apprised in that regard as well. Please stay safe and warm amidst this snowstorm.
Thanks for having me. Of course, the best thing to do, best thing that could happen is Senate Bill 62 dies. I don't care if it's a quiet death or a noisy death, just dies, period.
Absolutely agree. Mayor Mike Kaufman joining us on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Thank you, sir. And just a couple of final points on SB 62 before we go to the break. On the left, they clearly are doing two things. On the one hand, you've got a diminishment of our law enforcement and of their role in our communities. They have a left-wing agenda to reshape law enforcement in a way that seems increasingly radical. Senate Bill 217 was but one example last year. Again, this was the legislature's poorly crafted elimination of qualified immunity for police officers, which is one of several things that has been tying their hands of late and helping to contribute to this rise in crime that we have seen. And the left just seems to not care about enforcing the law in our communities, maintaining order, and ensuring that our law enforcement officers have the tools that they need to be successful. That's one thing. The other thing that we're seeing on the left here with this kind of approach to, say, Senate Bill 62 is that they don't care about property rights and property crimes. All too often, we hear folks on the left shrug it off and say, oh, it's property, it can be replaced. Insurance will cover it. Poppycock, as the Brits would say. Just because insurance may be able to cover it, depending on the circumstance, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they don't have adequate insurance. Sometimes they don't have insurance at all. But even if you assume, okay, insurance is going to cover it, that doesn't make it any more acceptable. We are living in a society these days where there is not a respect for property rights. And that is, again, antithetical to the U.S. Constitution and to the founding principles of this nation. Property rights are critical, meaning property crimes must be addressed, and the left just doesn't seem to get it, or more likely, to care about it. And that is a problem. We're going to take a quick break here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We'll talk with Andy McKeon of Liberty Lives Forever next about a celebration of the Constitution and the father of it, James Madison. Keep it right here, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Show you where it's at. We're gonna do the party. Turn
album, Sweet Release. It's a fun and funky tune, that driving beat. Yes, that's the name, that driving beat. And we're driving along to the beat of the best bumper music known to man, more than 7 years running. And this puts me in a fun and peppy mood when we got a positive segment to close on here on today's edition of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, as we celebrate American liberty, the U.S. Constitution, and the birthday of the man known as the father of the U.S. Constitution and the father of the Bill of Rights, none other than the great late fourth president of the United States, James Madison. And to talk about this here on 710 KNUS, I am so pleased to be joined by my dear friend, Andy McKeon, who runs Liberty Lives Forever at libertylivesforever.org. He also founded the Liberty Day Institute, which I ran for its last several years, back in 1996. And Andy established, along with the steering committee, the idea of Liberty Day, which we are celebrating this Tuesday, March 16th, which is the birthday, indeed, of James Madison. Andy McKeon, welcome back to the show, my friend, and happy Liberty Day.
Well, thank you, Jimmy, and happy Liberty Day, and let it live forever. Liberty live forever, right?
We all have to do our part to make sure that liberty lives forever, and that's why I wanted to have you on the program, because this is an opportunity for education and celebration, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. I think the key to preserving, protecting, defending our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, is public education. You have to know what you're fighting for and what you're protecting, what your rights are, and participate in our government. That's what we, the people, to form a more perfect union, as the Constitution starts. So it's public involvement, public education, right? Not, this is not political or partisan.
How did this idea of Liberty Day and celebrating James Madison's birthday come about back in 1996 or so?
Well, my deceased wife, Kathy, and I were in the Lions Club in Denver, Colorado, and we were doing a summer literacy program at libraries during the summer. And the library is going to be closed on July 4th. So the week before, I said to the students that we were tutoring, next week is July 4th. We're not meeting. The library's closed. What are we celebrating? And not one student, we had six libraries, 218 students, and not one knew what the significance of July 4th was. Some said a barbecue, fireworks, but no one knew it was claiming independence from Britain because of their usurpations and abuses of King George III against the colonists. So the next week when the library met, we gave each student a copy of the Declaration of Independence, a little American flag, and had our volunteers go over the Declaration of Independence. So I decided at that point it was a shame that our young people did not know what July 4th was, and I asked them about the Constitution. They didn't know that either. So we decided to print little books, pocket Constitution books, and have elected officials go into classes, give out these books for free, and that's how it started.
Now, how about the origin of the name Liberty Day and the determination that, you know what, we should honor James Madison and his birthday should be Liberty Day, March 16th?
Well, we decided to keep this totally nonpartisan, nonpolitical, and diverse. We reached out to 25 different people that were leaders in our community, and we met once a month, and we decided to pick a day to focus on this effort. And someone mentioned Madison's birthday. I don't remember who it was. And we voted to pick Madison's birthday, since he's the father of the Constitution, to celebrate our country's founding documents. Then everyone said, well, what are we going to call this day? And so we came up with a bunch of names, and we voted on it. And the majority, the vast percentage, voted to call it Liberty Day. So it wasn't my idea to call it that. it was a Democratic vote. And we actually had people all over the state that were voting here. So that's how it came about.
Again, we're talking with Andy McKeon, who heads up Liberty Lives Forever, libertylivesforever.org, which is a Colorado-based education effort on civics. And he founded this very, just even the concept, along with the steering committee, of Liberty Day and James Madison's birthday. That was in 1996 that you began that effort to educate kids about America's founding documents, Andy. And then within just over 4 years later, an incredible thing happened on the floor of the United States House of Representatives in October of the year 2000, on October 10th, 2000, in particular, to be specific. And it's remarkable, too, because it was a wholly bipartisan effort. Tell us what happened, and then I want to share a little bit of audio, give folks a blast from the past of October 2000.
Well, we had five U.S. representatives, a number from Maryland and someone from Colorado, and they talked about the importance of this event and this Liberty Day idea. And Elijah Cummings, who at the time was the chair of the Black Congressional Caucus, and Connie Morella from Maryland, and actually Tom Tancredo from Colorado, were the three main people that talked about it on the floor of the House. And then it was voted on unanimously by the House. It went to the Senate, and actually Jeff Sessions, who is a senator who introduced it on the floor of the Senate. So it passed unanimously in the House and the Senate to recognize Madison's birthday.
And
that's what happened.
And in the House of Representatives, then Congressman Tom Tancredo was one of the lead spearheaders there.
I mean, yeah, he was.
Talk about remarkable how you had Tom Tancredo of Colorado, one of the most conservative members of Congress at that time, and Elijah Cummings of Maryland, one of the most liberal members of Congress at that time, pairing up to celebrate the life and legacy of James Madison and say, yes, we should do this nationally.
We appealed to their, obviously, patriotism and love of country. And that's what we said. This should not be partisan or political. So if we can get people on different sides of the aisle together as Americans, not as Democrat or Republican or African American or white or whatever, as Americans, we're all Americans, and encourage all Americans, because our Constitution and Declaration of Independence define us as who we are, as Americans. So we figure it'd have a much bigger impact the more diverse people that we had speaking on behalf of it. And since it was voted on unanimously in the House and unanimously in the Senate, the rest of the elected officials at that time agreed. So no matter what your political affiliation was, everyone realized it's important that we all need to know what's in the Constitution.
It would be wonderful if we could have that kind of comedy these days, C-O-M-I-T-Y, but it's hard to fathom at this point. But we should have a renaissance in that, as we all recognize, as your organization says, that liberty lives forever. But it only lives forever if we all do our part. I want to go back to October 10th, the year 2000. I just think this is so cool. And it always was such a thrill when I was a volunteer for you at the Liberty Day Institute and then took over as president to have this piece of history that you brought about on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, Andy. So I'm going to share this clip with predominantly it's a little bit of Elijah Cummings and then Congressman Tom Tancredo. Let's listen to a couple minutes of this and hear this type of comedy and approach on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives to acknowledging our nation's history and one of its seminal founding fathers.
And in the words of James Madison, he said simply these: "The prescriptions in favor of liberty ought to be leveled against the quarter where the greatest danger lies, namely, which possesses the highest prerogative of power. But this is not found in either the executive or legislative departments of government, but in the body of the people, operating by the majority against the minority." And so with that, Madam Speaker, I urge all of my colleagues to support this resolution. I congratulate a sponsor, and I would reserve the balance of my time.
The gentlewoman from Maryland is recognized.
Thank you. Madam Speaker, it gives me pleasure to recognize the sponsor of this resolution, Mr. Tancredo from Colorado, for such time as he may consume.
The gentleman from Colorado is recognized for such time as he may consume.
I thank the gentlelady for yielding. Madam Speaker, I could not do better in terms of describing the importance of this resolution and its historical implications than my two colleagues have done here from the state of Maryland. Both of them, I think, have been incredibly articulate in proposing or in expressing those sentiments. I will only add that it is important also to remember that James Madison, as the fourth president of the United States, was also the major author of the Virginia Plan, which is a model and the basis for the United States Constitution that emerged from the Constitutional Convention in 1787. And I want to also say that this whole issue comes to us today on the floor of the House as a result of the really tireless efforts of one individual in my district, a gentleman by the name of Andy McKeon, who, with other members of the Lions Club, took this on as a project some time ago and decided that something had to be done in order to increase the level of knowledge that students, especially students and youngsters, have about the Constitution, about the Bill of Rights, and about really what liberty is, it means in the United States of America. As part of that task, they have been instrumental in delivering and distributing literally hundreds of thousands of copies of the Constitution. The Liberty Day Colorado is the way it's identified here, but these little pocket constitutions have gone out to schools all over Colorado. There are over 1 million active members of the Lions Club nationwide, and it is my understanding that this is a project they are anticipating to take on as an organization. It is supported right now in state legislatures throughout the country: Colorado, California, Maine, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina, Virginia, New Hampshire, Montana, Mississippi, Indiana, Idaho, Wyoming, and other states are on the way. It is nonpartisan, as evidenced by the discussion here today, and it's funded entirely through businesses and individual contributions. It will be the national recognition will provide a rallying point for this grassroots movement. And it is also, I think, a tribute to individuals like Mr. McKeon. I mean, really, a textbook could be written about the way in which he has devoted a good portion of his life to this event and how it has worked its way through the process and now appears before us on the floor of the House and hopefully will eventually become part of our national recognition of Liberty Day. So, again, I want to thank the committee and I want to thank the members here who have spoken so eloquently in its support, and I yield the balance of my time.
All right, so Andy McKeon, there you go. Then Congressman Tom Tancredo on the floor of the House of Representatives, not only acknowledging a celebration of Liberty Day and why we need to do this in a nonpartisan way, but giving well-earned credit to you, sir, for really helping to move this thing forward. You've continued to do that now with Liberty Lives Forever. What are your reflections listening to that from the year 2000?
My wife, Kathy, and I happened to be in Washington, D.C. when this was brought up on the floor of the U.S. House and the Senate. So it brings back really fond memories, and it's still needed probably more now than ever to make sure that we educate ourselves and our children, our grandchildren, nieces and nephews. It just reinvigorates me in realizing that this is something that has to happen all the time. We have to keep pushing this to preserve, protect, and defend our way of life by educating ourselves and doing what it takes to preserve it and be a role model for other countries. Mm. As you know, Jimmy, I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa for 5 years. And when I was there, people really wanted to come to America. They wanted me to bring them here because they knew the opportunity and freedom here. So we're not just for America. We're a beacon of hope, like the Statue of Liberty, right? Or the Liberty Bell, for people all around the world. So it's not just for America that this is important.
Right.
The stronger we are and the freer we are, the more that sends the message to the rest of the world, this is something worth emulating.
Mm. Well,
not communism or dictatorship, right?
That is so well put. I couldn't possibly agree more. And so I want to ask you, as we come upon Liberty Day this Tuesday, March 16th, Andy McKeon, and this week is a week of celebration for the Constitution and of James Madison, what is your ask for our audience tonight?
Well, what I'd like people to do is to read the book, read the Constitution, study it, learn it, and discuss it with your family, your friends, coworkers, classmates, teachers, whoever in your network, to really immerse yourself in the document. So you really learn what your rights are. You learn about the government, the checks and balances. And then the ask that I'd really like to see is to email your U.S. representative, Senator Bennett and Hickenlooper, Governor Polis, and President Biden through their websites. They all have websites. You can just Google it, Google their names, and their website will come up. And there's always a contact me button to email or contact your representative, mm-hmm. and to share whatever you want about the Constitution, mm-hmm. maybe what you learned, what you liked about it, whatever you want to say. Questions about it. The idea is to have inundate, hopefully, our representatives from the people to show the impact that this is having. And I think if everyone's doing this, it unites us. It unites us as Americans. And like you were saying earlier, the polarization now that's going on, it might help. I don't know how much, but if we can reflect on being an American first, mm-hmm. and that's what's important.
Well,
preserving, protecting, defending our way of life.
And Andy, I would especially emphasize the notion of speaking to a young person in your life. If you are a parent or a grandparent, whether it is in person or by Zoom or even over the phone, why not open up the Constitution? Why not have a conversation? In fact, you should.
Yeah, I agree. That's the main ask. And even if, and I'd love to hear from you. Jimmy gave you our website. You can email me, andy@libertylivesforever.org, andy@libertylivesforever.org, and share with me what the experience was like for you. I'd love to hear from people. And then I can even let the media know, you know, the newspapers and others, what impact we're making. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Andy McKeon, go ahead.
There's no downside, as I could see.
No, only upside here. That's for darn sure. Andy McKeon, thank you so much for what you do, for what you've done, and for joining us tonight on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Please stay safe and warm amidst the snowstorm. And also, of course, a very happy Liberty Day to you.
And you know, Jimmy, I'm depending on you. You're a youngster. You got a lot of years ahead of you. Keep pushing to preserve, protect, and defend our way of life. I know you will.
Oh, no doubt about
that. You're the millennials. Get your millennials and the others on board, right?
Absolutely, brother. That's for darn sure. Andy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy.
All right. That is it for us today here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We are going to go out, though, to none other than the great late Ray Charles and his rendition of America the Beautiful, because I'm feeling like it is perfect. The perfect pin to put on this conversation with Andy McKeon of Liberty Lives Forever, libertylivesforever.org. Thank you so much. Please stay safe and warm this weekend. Make smart decisions. We appreciate you joining us tonight. We'll be back next Saturday night, 5 p.m. And as always, may God bless America, the beautiful, and happy Liberty Day.
America. Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Over the fruited plain. But now wait a minute, I'm talking about America. Sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, I wish I had somebody to help me sing this.